Is it the 5th?
6th.
Oh. Yes. This sounds was recorded on the 6th of February, 1962. Sitters, Leslie Flint and Mrs. Conacher. That's now working, sir. We can sit.
Am I in the right spot?
Yes.
You don't mind where one sits?
No, it makes no difference.
No.
I should be interested to know how it plays back on yours.
Yes, yes. That's what you know.
Well, I've played several tapes belonging to other people, you know, tapes
yes.
that they have made on their machines
yes.
on this, so it's perfectly all right.
Yes, oh, it
plays
must.
Back all right, you
yes,
see.
Yes, I'm sure it does. Thank you, Mickey. Thank
Good.
You for coming.
I'm very pleased to see you. Your husband's here.
Splendid. May I ask if anyone else is here?
Well, there are quite a number of other people.
Yes.
I presume some of them are relations of yours and your husband's.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I had someone in particular in mind.
Well,
I don't want you to tell me, but I mean
no,
the person. But had you hoped for someone especially?
Well, I was just wondering if one's guides came, Mickey.
Oh, yes, of course. But you see, I think they rather got into the habit of you rather anticipating your husband.
Oh, yes.
And having conversation with him on various matters that they
yes.
deliberately stand to one side.
Yes, well, it is, of course, my husband. I want to hear this, but it's rather nice to hear if the guides are there.
Oh, yes, they're always here. But what I thought you meant was that you had someone particular you wanted to speak to other than your husband. In that case, I was prepared, of course, to try to make some effort to do that. But I don't want to butt in. I'm only trying to be helpful.
Yes, well, you always are, you know, Mickey. No, I like my husband to talk, but it just helps the background if I know if anyone
yes.
else is here.
Just a moment.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, my dear.
Hello, darling.
Heard you asking just now the boy about other people who were present and guides in particular.
Yes.
Well, of course, when I come and talk to you, there are innumerable people who are here for various reasons, some who are regular communicators, inasmuch that they're always interested in communicating and always interested in the possibility and are anxious at some time, possibly in the near future, to make contact with you and have, in some instances, endeavoured to communicate with you through other mediums. But they have always sort of made it possible for me, you know, stood to one side deliberately so that I should talk to you.
Oh, yes,
but,
yes, please, that's what I want.
The point is that,
yes.
Of course, quite a number would like to talk to you on various things, some of the guides in particular. Can you hear?
Yes, darling, better than ever.
I know that there are certain points which possibly you want to raise, things that you'd like me particularly to talk about. Should you at any time feel so inclined, you know, I'm only too pleased to try and answer any of your questions.
Yes.
If you want to ask anything in particular.
Well, unless you have anything special to talk about, you did say last time that you were enjoying teaching very much. Would
yes.
you like to talk about that?
Yes.
Your work in that respect.
I try, when I come and talk to you, to bear in mind that these recordings may be listened to by many people, and possibly in many instances people who are beginning to have some knowledge of this subject and are interested to know as much as they possibly can about life over here and what it's really like and what happens
yes.
to a person, particularly when they first pass over and so on. And I bear this in mind and endeavour whenever I can to say the sort of thing that would interest most people, if you follow.
Yes, I do. Yes, that's quite right, too.
Because I do feel that at some later date, possibly, you may sort of do something about all this and possibly even write it down and publish it.
Yes.
There's a possibility. You may not feel inclined at the moment.
Oh, yes, I've been working to that end. I'm just beginning to see the pattern, I think.
Yes, well, of course, the point is to know when you have sufficient material, what is the sort of material that's best to put into a book and what is best to leave out.
Yes.
And that in itself obviously will take some time.
Yes, of course it will.
But in regard to teaching, obviously one has to have qualifications over here, just the same as one would have to have qualifications on your side. And the average person over here first must feel their way, gradually assimilate their new life, realize what it's all about, and in the process of doing that, one does obviously change considerably. And it is not until one reaches a certain peak, if you like, that one is in a position, obviously, to teach. In other words, you must have assimilated a great deal of knowledge and experience in the particular sphere in which you find yourself. And as you develop further, so you begin to realize that you can be of some help to less fortunate people, people particularly who have only just recently come into this new state of being. And one does, therefore, make the effort to enter into the sphere nearest to the earth. That is the condition of life, you might say, which is general inasmuch that it is the sphere to which the majority of people come.
That we call the summer land?
Well, these are very loose terms. I mean, I know there are many expressions used, summer land being one of them, but we must always bear in mind that this is just merely a term. Summer land, to me, sounds very nice, of course, but it doesn't really tell you anything. I mean, otherwise, if you're going to say we have a summer land, then presumably we have a winter land and an autumn land. I mean, if you look at it from a human's point of view, you see. No, summer land possibly for some people is all right, but I prefer not to think of it in that sense, because a lot of people are obviously in a condition of life which to them is extremely pleasant, extremely happy, and in which many, you might say, are quite content to remain. This, of course, is not a good thing. I'm not suggesting that one should not be content and that one should not feel inclined to make any attempt to better oneself. One obviously must be discontented to a certain extent, in the right sense, that is, and one must always strive for something better. That, of course, is the beauty of this life, that there is so much to aspire to, there's so much to achieve, so much to experience, so much to discover. It is a world of excitement, and yet at the same time, I wouldn't like to give the impression that because of all these opportunities, that one is by very nature restless, because to be restless in itself is not a good thing, and yet at the same time, it is not a good thing to be completely content, completely satisfied. In other words, what I'm trying to explain is that although we do not have time here, as you understand the meaning, there is a realization, if you like, of time, inasmuch that we are controlled to a certain extent by our feelings and our emotions. We are affected by conditions, but these conditions are conditions to which we, whether we realize it at first or not, is neither here nor there, but the point is which we have created or helped to create. We are in a condition of mind, I suppose one should say. And therefore, if you are living in a condition of life in which you are personally satisfied, then you have a form of contentment, a form of happiness. But it's only when you've begun to realize that this is only an aspect of life, I suppose that is the truest sense, truest thing that one can say about it, that one has an aspect of life which one accepts, which one is content with. But gradually you begin to realize there must be many other aspects, and you begin to seek. And of course, once you start to seek, once your mind is open, then you're ready to receive, and that is where the teachers come in, such as myself.
Yes, that's very interesting, darling. You were going to tell me about child education, weren't you?
Yes, but then we come up against another interesting factor. You see, the earth, naturally, quite rightly, looks upon a child as someone uninformed, plastic, which of course a child's mind is, and which of course to a great extent an adult's life mind should be plastic. It should be able to be reached. With a child, it is not always necessarily more difficult to teach. In fact, I'd go as far as to say that if I had the choice between, over here that is, of teaching a child or an adult, if I wanted to take the easiest course, which of course one doesn't necessarily, but if one wanted to, the child would be much more pliable, much more easy to reach, much more, shall we say, able to be helped.
Yes.
Because the average adult is more difficult. They have reached so-called adult life on earth. They have otherwise, in other words, they've accepted to themselves certain ideas, certain conditions. They've accepted certain factors in life as gospel, as it were, taken for granted. They've accepted certain laws as being right or just according to their outlook and so on. In other words, an adult has more of a formed mind.
Yes.
But it's invariably, we must always remember this, always, nearly always, invariably materialistically minded outlook.
Yes.
Whereas a child has not reached this stage of accepting ideas to the extent that the adult has. It has not been affected so much, shall we say, by the earth and life on earth, and by people, preconceived ideas, strong views that people have placed into the mind of the young.
Yes. Have you schools, darling? Special buildings?
Oh, yes, we have wonderful buildings, so fantastically beautiful, some of them, that, that it really is an impossible thing to describe. One cannot depict or describe here in an earthly language of a spiritual building. And these buildings are divided into sections, many of them. I suppose you say they were graded, like schools on earth are graded. I don't suggest that they're classes in the sense that it's form 1, 2, 3, and 4 and so on. It isn't exactly that. But you see, each teacher has specific work to do, has a certain type of lesson to give, a demonstration to show, a work to perform. Yeah, for instance, in certain classes, people, children, or adults for that matter, are taught how to see for themselves. This may sound the most peculiar thing to say, to see for oneself. You think that automatically when you come here that you would see. Well, of course you do see. But what you see is to a great extent coloured by your own self. In other words, you can distort. You can not see perfectly. For instance, a similar thing could be applied as a simile that is on earth. People go around, they see everything, yet they see very little. They see very, very little indeed. They miss so much. Many people, for instance, would go into the country, shall we say, on your side. But they don't really see the country. They see fields, they see trees, they see rivers and so on. But it doesn't register, it doesn't have any real effect on them. They don't enter into it, they don't become part of it. It doesn't have any strong reality to them.
No.
And so it is over here that there are many people who inherit or come into a condition of life to which they are not adjusting, I suppose that's the best way to put it. They don't see, and we teach them to see. We teach them to know, to feel, to enter into, to become part of. And they begin to expand. And it's really, what we do is we affect some auric emanation which comes from them.
Yes. Well, that's very interesting, darling. Do you use books?
Well, yes. To some people listening to this, must sound most strange, but it's true. On certain spheres, books are used, because it's a common accepted thing to read. You see, a person coming from your world is in no state of development to be able to assimilate knowledge by inspiration, by bringing, as it were, unto oneself. You see, here you're taught to assimilate, to draw to yourself. You see, here, if I can put it like this, it's a very bad simile, people can be, or should be, like magnets. They should be able to attract to themselves all sorts of conditions of things, and above all, attract people of a higher nature and a higher level who can enter into harmony with them, and by the transmission of thought and the vibration can so help and be helped. But the average person, and we must always remember when we're thinking of the average person, they are not ready, they are not yet sufficiently endowed with insight, with foresight, they're not sufficiently conscious of the tremendous possibilities of this world. And that is what we really, really teach them in the early initial stages.
Yes.
We show them that although, for instance, at first they can read books, any book, practically, because everything that has been written, everything that has been registered in human life, human society, can be obtained here. In other words, it can be tapped. It's a source that can be tapped, is the only way I can express this. If it is felt necessary for a library of books, then a library of books, to that person being essential, are an accepted fact. But it's when you get beyond all this, when you realize that knowledge, true experience, is not necessarily found in books only, but in life itself.
Of
in other
course.
Words, you learn to tune in to vast spheres and vast possibilities of those spheres. In other words, when your consciousness becomes more open to receive, so you dispense with the mundane, with the materialistic, if you like, accepted ideas of things, and you open up yourself to tremendous possibilities, inasmuch that you begin to visualize, you begin to see, and that is one of the things that we teach, how to see mentally and spiritually the things that are all around and about you, which at first you do not see, and often which are invisible, because you yourself, by your outlook, and because you have still many of the conditions of earth life attached to you, which you haven't discarded, you you are blinded.
Yes, well, that's very interesting, dear. Very interesting indeed.
I mean, when a person first comes here, take an average, I'm thinking, of course, of one's own race, material earthly race, an Englishman, for instance. I mean, I don't say that he would have a preconceived idea that when he came to heaven he'd have a sitting room and a fire. I don't mean that exactly. But the point is that the average Englishman would not really be happy unless he had the sort of surroundings to which he'd been accustomed on earth. If you were to put the average Englishman, shall we say, in an Eastern setting, and you were to give him the kind of atmosphere which is natural and which is accepted to as an Eastern, he wouldn't be happy.
No.
He couldn't be able to adjust himself very easily. It's true, of course, that when on earth people, shall we say, from England go to India, and they live there for a number of years, and to some extent they accept the Indian way of life within reason, but they still like and surround themselves with the sort of things which are common to their upbringing and common to their nationality.
Yes.
Well, over here, on the initial stages of development, or earthly plane, more near the earth planes, you do have, because of the vast numbers of peoples of all nations, you have every possible conceivable type of life.
Yes.
Whether it's in the way of life, whether it's in architecture and design, and so on. And indeed, on certain spheres very near the earth, where people of like mind to the earth live, they even eat the the kind of foods which they consider are essential.
Yes.
You see, the whole point is that as we get further and further away from the earth, the less like earth we become, the less earthy we are, the less we think and are in tune with the earth.
Yes.
But obviously, the nearer planes to the earth are merely a reflection of the earth, because they are inhabited by people who have only perhaps recently left the earth, but although in some instances maybe hundreds of years, depends, because some people do not progress very fast.
Yeah.
And in consequence you have, and that's why of course they're so intriguingly interesting, that's why no one in a sense really need fear dying, because whatever sphere they go to is bound to be, most certainly is, excitingly interesting, because even the lower spheres, you do find vast variety of scenery, vast variety of buildings. And in fact, in certain spheres near the earth, there are exact counterparts of earthly buildings. People, for instance, who felt very intensely, shall we say, about a particular building, would find on their arrival here an exact counterpart of that building. For instance, if you had a person who was an architect and had designed a building which they were very proud of, which they loved very much, because they put so much of themselves into it, because it was part of their own creative thought and mind, and everything about it was partly, you might say, of themselves, they would find such a building identically reconstructed here.
Yes. Well, that's very, very interesting.
You see, thought is so tremendous in its power. On your side, everything is created by the power of thought. Everything that man has created originates from his thought force. You use material substances to create these things, that is, in regard to things like architecture, buildings, or whether it's painting or music, you use violins, pianos, so on and so on. And all these aids are essential. Over here on the lower spheres, and when I talk about the lower spheres, I would not like you to think that because I mention them as being lower, they're bad spheres.
Yeah.
Because they're not. They are spheres which are very near the earth plane, and in consequence very similar. So you do have, on certain spheres near the earth, great art galleries, great pictures, great artists still create new works, and so on and so on. Great orchestras, great musicians. But as they, the individuals that is, develop and their outlook becomes so much wider and their experience more vast, more expressive, they are able, as they go into other spheres, they are able to create works which are utilized in these lower spheres and in other spheres. It's a gradual progression, slow, often very slow, and is hardly perceptible. In fact, there are no demarcation lines between spheres. People talk glibly about the lower spheres or this sphere, and perhaps to some extent I have talked in that sense, but what I want to convey is there is no such thing as a demarcation line. There's no such thing as the end of a territory and another one beginning. They all intermingle, they all commingle. But the point is that you do not become conscious of another sphere until such time as you have progressed to that point where you become conscious of it.
Yes, I quite understand that. And darling, what is the ultimate aim or end of all this progression?
If one were to know that, dear, I think that would perhaps not be a good thing, and I don't think it would be a wise thing, and I don't think there is such a thing. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that I do not think there is any end. I do not think there is any ultimate goal. This may strike some people very forcibly and possibly will not even like it, but the point is that I do not honestly think there is any ultimate goal, inasmuch that there is any final goal.
No, I see.
I would say that we each and everyone has a goal which we strive for. That's true enough. But the point is that when we reach that particular point, then we begin to visualize greater vistas, greater possibilities, and we go on again.
Yes.
In other words, there is no such thing, as far as I can tell, as end, and I doubt very much that there can be. Life, if one is to be in a conscious world, then there must always be something new, something exciting, something left to strive for and experience. That is life. It's motion perpetual. But if one reached the apex, then no matter how marvelous that was, that state of being, eventually, because there was nothing left to strive for, nothing left to assimilate, one couldn't exist in it. I think that is the art of life, the art of living, whether it's on your side, whether it's on this, that there is always tomorrow, there's always a possibility of what may take place, what may come, what new experience one may have or find. You see, the point is that with your world, you realize that there is an ultimate end, in a physical sense at least.
Yes.
And although one invariably on earth endeavors not to think too deeply about it, unless of course you're spiritualistically inclined, but the point is the average person does not like to think about death, does not like to think about getting old. They dread, the average person dreads getting old, but only because they have no knowledge, it's a kind of fear, also because they do not like the idea of losing their youth and their vigor and vitality and so on, because they still think that there are many things they want to do. In other words, the earth world is limited to a point, but there is nevertheless always the possibility of going on a little further and a little further, although the ultimate end, physically at least, must come. The whole point, the secret of life surely is that there is always something new. If one were constantly doing, I know you can say to me, oh yes, well the average person does do more or less everything the same, day in and day out, but what makes life exciting, or what makes life more interesting is, whoever the person is, the possibility of some change, no matter how small, some new experience perhaps to experience, some new book even perhaps to read, or some new music to listen to. In other words, it is not just the constant repetition that matters in life, but the possibility of an adventure in some shape or form, something new happening, some new experience, some new friend to contact or meet, some new conversation. There are so many little things which really are possibly in some senses the most important about life. So the point is that we never stop. I think once one reaches a point where nothing interests one anymore, where there's nothing left to experience, to assimilate, that is why I think some people, although their physical body is more or less intact, perfectly all right, something suddenly happens to them. I don't say this as an explanation in every instance, but it does happen with some people. That for no reason at all, they just leave your world. I do feel there are some people who have lost complete interest.
Yes, oh, I think, yes, yes.
And in consequence, they just lay down and die.
Yes.
What, of course, the fundamental truth about all this is, I think, that, of course, love, and by love I mean real spiritual love, revitalizing love, a power which is so tremendous, of which very few people really on earth have any true knowledge, is one of the most important factors. Love is vital, love is important. It is this power of love which overcomes so much evil, overcomes so much tragedy. In fact, I'd go as far as to say that love in itself is possibly the greatest power and force of all, because by love one can achieve so much more than one possibly could ever realize while on earth.
Yes.
And faith, people talk glibly about faith, but faith, and truly this is so, faith can remove mountains. And I mean that in a physical sense. I really believe that if humanity, individually and collectively, had sufficient faith, the whole course of the world could be changed, the whole condition of life could be altered. So few people have any real faith in goodness and the power of goodness, what it can achieve. if one is desperately in need, and I don't mean in a sense only material of any means, but desperately in need, I'm sure that one's faith can bring about such changes, can bring about such extraordinary things that human beings could be amazed.
Yes.
I do know this, and I have talked to many ancients, Chinese, Egyptians over here, some of whom I've learned a great deal from. I have discovered that thousands of years ago in ancient China and in ancient Egypt, they had discovered things which today are taken for granted, and certain things which have not yet been discovered. In other words, they've yet to be rediscovered. The ancient Chinese had a tremendous philosophy. They had a tremendous power. And certain individuals, certain great teachers, Chinese and Egyptian, were able to achieve a tremendous amount of what I suppose today would be called miracles.
Yes, but I'm very fond of my Egyptian guide, darling, and of course ancient Egypt understood colour therapy.
Yes.
Thousands of years ago, and it's only coming in here now, isn't it?
Well, the ancient, certain ancient Egyptians, and certain Chinese, had a wonderful form of communication between our world and yours. Unfortunately, like so many things, it became distorted and ill-used, and often used, unfortunately, particularly among the Egyptians, in a very material sense. Basically, fundamentally, there was much good, but it became twisted and used for power, material power, that is, which, of course, was partly a power factor in the decline of the ancient Egyptian civilization, but that's another long, long story.
Yes, you must tell me about that sometime, darling. Sometime, will you tell me about marriage in the spirit world?
Of course.
I feel it must be very different from on Earth, because after all, there's no cooking, no sinks,
marriage,
no dusting.
Marriage, of course, does not exist here.
No.
That is purely a man-made condition. Marriage here is a marriage of mind and of spirit. It is the blending of souls, which, of course, a marriage on Earth should be in its purest sense, but seldom is, I'm afraid. But the point is that we do not obviously marry. We have no giving and taking in marriage. And there's no possessing here. One does not, for instance, desire to possess in any shape or form or any sense another person. Here one is completely in harmony with another soul. You may be tremendously attuned in and have like thoughts, like outlook, like mind. But at the same time, there's no possessing, there's no sort of giving and taking in marriage, there's no birth in the sense that you understand it. Of course, all this is natural law. On Earth, you obviously have natural law too, but you cannot regulate natural law by ceremonies, material ceremonies, which are binding, so-called binding. You see, two people will only remain together when they are absolutely right to each other, when they are so sort of tuned in, and this love is so overwhelming, so all-embracing, that you naturally, instinctively desire to be in one, as one with that person. You see, on Earth, just because two people are married, I'm afraid that should not be considered a binding thing. Of course, this will not be popular. I know in some instances people will condemn it, but the point is that a marriage doesn't bind two people together only in the sight of the law. What binds people together, surely, is love and the desire to assist and to help each other, to expand and to grow in mental and spiritual stature. And having children in itself is a tremendous responsibility, not purely in a material sense, well, on Earth, but a spiritual one. Very few people realize the tremendous spiritual responsibility they have towards their children. I don't mean by that bringing them up in some narrow creedal sense. You see, you're not only giving a child a body, you're giving it a spiritual body too. You're giving it a spiritual birth. You see, so many people think when they have children that it's just the physical aspect. In fact, that is a tragedy of marriage, that is the tragedy of innumerable souls on earth, that they merely think on the material level. It's a dual thing when on earth, a material and a spiritual one, unless those two things, two aspects go in hand together, in balance, there can be no true happiness.
Yeah, I quite see that. Yes, that's very, very interesting,
well,
darling.
I have to go, darling.
Thank you.
I'd like to have stayed ages.
Oh, I think
so
this
many
is
points to raise, so many interesting things to discuss. But we'll continue on. We'll discuss many, many aspects
yes.
of life.
In
but
2 weeks'
my,
time,
yes,
I hope.
Yes,
yes.
All my love and blessings. And
thank you very much, darling.
I'll talk to you again soon. God
yes.
bless, my dear.
God
bye
bless.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Mickey. Wasn't he wonderful?
It was fabulous, wasn't it?
Yes, I think he's simply wonderful. He just excelled himself today. He covered so much ground.